Iconic Maine foods. It's a brave thing to do, to try and make a list of the most iconic Maine foods. But Down East Magazine took a shot at it this month, naming 35 entries in a special section. On its list, non-controversial items such as wild blueberry pie, baked beans, fiddleheads, and lobster rolls. But also there are some that might be up for debate. Is seaweed an iconic Maine food? Fluffernutter. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking Maine food on the program today. Iconic favorites, new trends, and food news. We've got more James Beard nominees this year, another Maine winner of the TV competition show Chopped, and a growing food economy across the state. What Maine food is essential at your Maine table? Give us a call. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. If someone asked you to name an iconic Maine food, what would be the first thing to come to mind? Lobster? Blueberry pie? What about brown bread or baked beans? Today we'll talk about foods that Maine is best known for, as well as what drives our food economy here. Joining me in the studio, Nancy Harmon Jenkins. I know you very well, Nancy. I apologize for stumbling on your name. Food historian, writer, journalist, speaker, and cookbook author. Sam Hayward, award-winning chef and partner at 4th Street Restaurant. And Joe Riccio, an author who specializes in food, drink, and travel. He is the food editor for Decor Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have any stories to share about classic Maine dishes? Is there an iconic Maine food that you have never really liked? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here. How much fun is this topic? So I know that all three of you participated in one way or another in this new Down East magazine with the iconic Maine food issue. Some thoughts on just even choosing 35 iconic Maine foods. Could you all do it? Or if you had to do the list all by yourself, how many would be on it? Nancy?
Oh, I could easily do it, but I didn't have anything to do with the selection at all. That was all done by Brian Kevin and his staff at Down East. And then they assigned things to us.
Yes, I was assigned Allen's Coffee Brandy. Oh. And not particularly, it's not a part of my daily routine anymore.
So why do you think you were assigned Allen's Coffee Brandy?
I think that Brian just felt that I would express the true spirit of the liquor.
Well, maybe. Do you agree? Is that an iconic Maine food?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's you know, it's iconic in that it's certainly identified with Maine, even though it's not made here. But the most of it is consumed here. It's I think it's one of those things that has its roots in, you know, the kind of logging, fishing industry. You know, it's very like, you know, early morning, putting your coffee when you have to wake up at 3:30 a.m. For a long day on the cold water, you know. But, you know, everybody has an Allen story, I guess, now. It's a little heavy for me. But, you know, I'll mix it with Moxie.
Oh, God.
I'll have a Rumford in a pint glass.
You know, I've spent my morning looking at pictures of beautiful food and getting hungry, but, you know, that just does not take me
You have
me
to have
there.
Something to wash it down, you know.
Sam, you wrote about smelt.
Yeah, well, that's a tradition in Bodenham in particular, and I think all up and down the Kennebec estuary, including Merrymeeting Bay when I live in its rivers. So all of my kids grew up going out to go smelt fishing in the wintertime, and there are several commercial smelt camps right in town. It's always an incredible time. And there's a little overlap with Allen's because if you're lucky and you get the right smelt shack, somebody has stashed an extra pint up on the shelf over the race hole. Yeah. So
Etiquette. It's
sharing the wealth.
Nancy, of the foods on the list, what are you the most passionate about?
Oh, I don't think I'm really passionate about any of them, and least of all blueberry pie and Indian pudding, which I was assigned to write about.
You're not passionate about blueberry pie?
Well, not the usual blueberry pie. I think it's very heavy. I don't like these Maine pies with crust on the top and crust on the bottom and a lot of overcooked fruit in between. I had a recipe for blueberry pie, but they told me I couldn't use it. And I've written that recipe many, many times. And I think it may even be on my website. It's a North Haven blueberry pie, and it's an open pie. It's a walnut crust. and then blueberries and sugar and maybe a little cornstarch mixed in to thicken it.
If you'll share it with us, we'll
I
share
will.
It
I'll put it on the website.
Oh,
how about
my
that?
Goodness. It's nice. Making me want summer to start. Yeah. Yum, yum, yum.
Well,
but
I have
Indian
to say the
pudding, I can leave behind easily.
That's a little heavy.
Yeah.
My wife's birthday is in August, and she doesn't care for cake very much. So she always asks, or has traditionally asked, for a blueberry pie with a candle in it for her birthday dessert.
And do you make it with two crusts, Sam?
I do make it with two crusts. I have to
you
admit
look
that
carefully
is,
at Nancy as
I'm
you say that.
I'm always careful around Nancy.
Sam probably makes much better flakier crusts than I do. Okay.
I'm not actually great at baking, but it's something I really love, and I love blueberries.
I don't believe you. Joe, what about desserts? Is there an iconic main dessert for
first
you?
First off, on the blueberry pie, I have to say, I don't like ice cream. I like whipped cream on pie. I feel like ice cream ruins the texture, especially if you have two crusts. Now it's just all off. If I had to choose a main dessert, I mean, I guess there really aren't that many that come to mind. Whoopie pies, I guess. I don't even know how that's a main thing. It's just a chocolate.
Well, let me
frosting.
Ask that, because I asked about Alan's coffee branding.
I know,
whoopie
I'll keep
pie,
going that direction.
Why, and whoopie pies are on the list. Why are whoopie pies the main thing? They're
I think the legislature may have determined that at some point.
Sure.
You know, our legislator, our hardworking legislature in Augusta, got together and decided that whoopie pies were actually from Maine and not from Pennsylvania, which contends that very strongly.
They do. Huh.
And there's something almost exactly the same named something else in other parts of the country, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
It's hardly an enticing name, I think.
So, you know, there are a lot of traditional foods here. You know, we have the boiled dinner, we have baked beans, we have a fried seafood basket, which I would just say fried clams. Nancy, am I pronouncing this right? Cretons?
Creton, yeah.
Creton?
Yeah, creton.
Creton.
I didn't know about creton. What is creton, and would you agree that it's iconic?
It is. For, you know, we Anglos living on the coast tend to ignore the fact that a large, large segment of this state is French in origin. And creton, if I'm not mistaken, creton are the crispy bits that are left over when you're rendering pork fat. Is that
That's
right,
Sam? Interesting. Like cracklings. But creton, as I've had it here in Maine in the past, is more like ground pork
like a terrine,
cooked with
right?
onion and nutmeg and simmered together until the juices run clear and then packed into a mold and chilled and
so
then sliced off.
It's sort of like, what was that? That wonderful Christmas time pie that the Francos made.
Tortiera?
Yeah. It's like a tortiera without the crust on it, right?
Okay.
You wrap it in a ploy instead.
Okay.
That's how you got to do it.
And ploys are on the list. Mm-hmm. I recently bought some buckwheat. I'm happy to learn that buckwheat's gluten-free. So if somebody in your family can't eat gluten, that's good to know. What about Fluffernutter? Is Fluffernutter on the menu at 4th Street, Sam?
I grew up most of my childhood in upstate New York, and they were popular there. I didn't know that that was identified with Maine or New England in any way at all.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah. We never, you know, I have the longest food memory of anybody, probably of any of your listeners even. And I don't recall them. Peanut butter and jelly, yes, but Fluffernutter, no.
Well, and I think part of this is the iconic Maine foods are not necessarily traditional Maine foods. And I'm wondering about foods that we're beginning to be known for, even though people have been making donuts in Maine for a long time, we're kind of becoming known for the potato donut, thanks
Absolutely.
To a certain
a certain person.
What do you all see as trends that you're excited about when it comes to Maine food?
Oh, I see people selling poutine all over the place. I think I'm turning into the negative person on this panel, but poutine is something I can live without. But lots and lots of the roadside stands now are selling poutine as part of their offerings.
It's like that Quebecois influence that's up north in the county is coming down here. I agree. Poutine, I think, is an overkill.
Yeah.
It's just so, like, you need you can't really get much done.
Oh, I'd take a two-crust blueberry pie over poutine any day.
Kind of with you. I don't know.
Well, Sam, what about you? What do you see as sort of new iconic Maine foods?
Wow. I'm hopeful that with all the changes in the Gulf of Maine and the different mix of seafoods that are coming out of the Gulf of Maine because of climate change and other things, I'm hopeful that seaweed and sea vegetables generally are going to be a very big deal. And oyster farms and bivalve farms generally are growing in numbers and in popularity and as an economic factor in Maine. So all of those together are developments I'm really excited about.
Tell us how to cook seaweed, how to source how to cook seaweed. Do we source it by going down to the shore and scooping some out?
That's the easiest way to do it. But most of it these days comes dehydrated or in some cases processed and frozen, so that you have a lot of different options. And the most common one is probably sugar kelp, which is sold in a variety of forms, primarily dried and whole fronds, but also frozen, and I guess there's even...
Dulse is another one.
Dulse is another very important one. And sea vegetables, seaweeds have been harvested in Maine for a very long time. There was a pretty sizable industry that I think we've kind of forgotten about that didn't make food
in Rockland.
Called marine colloids, that was a very big industry selling to industry and pharmaceutical businesses and so on. And I don't hear much about them much anymore. I don't even know if they're in Rockland now, but...
But I always wonder what we're going to do with seaweed. I love the idea that people are not just harvesting it, they're also growing it. There's an active aquaculture of seaweed.
Sure, because we don't want to over-harvest it either.
No, absolutely not.
I want to talk a little bit about restaurants. This year's James Beard nominations announced last month. Some new restaurants made the list, as did some old ones. As usual, Maine was well represented. Sam, congratulations on 4th Street in the Outstanding Restaurant category. Again,
thank you.
Do you see any certain trends, all of you, in the kinds of places and chefs being recognized here?
I think it's kind of an amazing shift. It makes me kind of wonder. I'm confused as to what they're going for anymore at the Beard Foundation, because it's like now, I mean, it's like, yes, I love the Palestiner as much as the next. I actually adore that place. It has amazing food. You know, Kong Tubat's a pho shop, and, you know, Purple House is a small bakery out in North Yarmouth. But I guess a lot of times with the Beard Awards, you used to always think of, like, a 4-star, 5-star restaurant, like the service experience and the whole, you know, the all-around thing, and not just necessarily the quality of the food, which, like I said, I love all those places, but I don't really know the criteria. I don't understand the criteria anymore for a Beard Award, personally.
I absolutely agree with you, Joe. I think it's confusing to put a place like the Purple House, which is a wonderful place, but to put it in the same category as 4th Street or some of the others that are mentioned that are, I don't want to try to define a restaurant, but Purple House is not a restaurant. It's a great place. Mm-hmm. And maybe it should be in the bakery category or some other category.
I mean, it is
like
technically
that.
A bakery. Yeah.
How many places in Maine do you think could be if the right tasters visited Maine on the right days? Do we have, you know, 50?
At least. I mean, there's a lot of places that are completely ignored. I don't even know who the Beard judges are anymore for the restaurant awards, but there are lots and lots of restaurants that are and parts of the state that are completely ignored. And I think that's to their discredit, to the discredit of the Beard Foundation in general.
And if I can jump in, as grateful as I am for the kind attention that the Beard Foundation has given to my restaurant and to Maine generally, when you think about it, I kind of wish they would be a little more transparent or a little more outgoing about what the criteria are and what the process is. I found that my own staff members had no idea what the meaning of the, many of them are new, but had no idea what the meaning of the award was, how important it can be, what an honor it is to be listed even as a semifinalist. So, I wish I understood exactly how those choices are made and who's making them.
Sure. So before I go to the calls, and I'm going to put you all on the spot, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question, but I'd love you all just to name a place that's not getting a lot of attention that you love.
It's not getting a lot of attention from the Beards?
Or just in general, from the whole... I mean, Maine is getting so much attention, as you've mentioned. Portland being Bon Appetit City of the Year. Yeah. The Beard Awards, just the food press. But, you know, we all know there are gems out there. So give us a recommendation that people might not have known.
Well, I would have to start with my daughter's restaurant in Rockport, 9 of June, of course. But I also think one of the great... misses in the Beard list was Solo Italiano in Portland. I think that's a fabulous restaurant, and why it wasn't in the long list, I don't know.
Okay.
I agree with both of those selections.
Okay. Joe?
Yeah, and I think Aroostook County in general, I think a lot of people, I mean, they think of Maine as the Rocky Coast, but I mean, what percentage of Maine is covered by the Allagash Forest? I mean, it's crazy. And you have restaurants up there like the Long Lake Sporting Club, Canterbury Royale, like, you have this, like, you know, high-end French restaurant that's literally in the middle of the woods with no lights for miles. Like, you feel like you're in the middle of, like, Fargo. And it's just, you know, half the clientele comes from Canada. And that's just the Maine that a lot of people don't know about or talk about. And there's so much good stuff up there, and it's so beautiful.
Okay, I'm going to go to Lynn, who's calling from Sanford. You've been on hold for a while. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Jennifer.
What do you love? What's an iconic Maine food to you?
Molasses.
Wow.
And why molasses?
Because it's good on anything and everything. My mother would make drop molasses cookies. Oh, so good.
Okay. Nice. Any agreement with the panelists?
Yeah. Well, it's also responsible for the flourishing rum trade here.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting selection choice because way back when Maine was a pretty poor state, refined sugar would have been a major household luxury, and molasses was a sweetener of choice, a sweetener that was available.
That's interesting you say that because it's maple sugar season. And
that's right.
In going back, looking over old English language Maine cookbooks and so forth, I don't find a lot of references to maple syrup or maple sugar.
Yeah.
And I'm puzzled by that because we think of it as such a traditional thing.
Thanks, Lynn, for your call. We'll sneak in one more before our break. We'll go to Emily from Old Orchard Beach. Hi, Emily. What's your iconic Maine food?
Yeah, you guys were talking about desserts, and for me, a classic Maine dessert is Moose Tracks ice cream.
Yum.
Yeah. Is that Giffords?
That's mine.
Yes. It's Giffords, right, Emily?
No, it's actually Giffords.
Exactly. Right. Exactly, Giffords. And I just think of, like, eating it in the summer at ice cream stands. Always so good.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there.
I don't think I've ever had it.
It's like kind of like Rocky Road, but with Moose Tracks.
Okay. Yeah, really, you can't go wrong with any Giffords ice cream, can you, Emily? I was surprised, speaking of that, the Down East issue named... what was the ice cream?
Grape nuts?
Grape nuts ice cream. I've never had that.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, and grape nuts, I mean, in a similar vein, grape nuts custard, a kind of a baked custard with grape nuts in it that usually sink to the bottom during the baking, but it's really good.
grape nuts aren't a main thing, though, are they?
No, but the
but
way
grape
we,
nut
the,
pudding and grape nut ice cream certainly are.
Okay.
I think it's the only place in the country where you can get grape nut ice cream, probably.
All right. Well, on that note, we are going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from Sam Sifton when we come back. This is Maine Calling, and we're talking about iconic Maine food.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Marshall Communications, with Nancy Marshall's PR Maven podcast, offering advice on building your brand and network. MarshallPR.com.
Depending on how you see it, Central Maine Power's proposed new transmission line to bring hydroelectric power from Canada to southern New England will boost the state's economy and help to curb climate change, or it will forever scar the Maine woods and its economy.
Sometimes I feel very angry, and then other times I just feel very sad because of what's happening.
Power Struggle in the Maine Woods, a week-long series, all this week on Maine Public Radio, and with more on the web at mainepublic.org/power.
Heard on Morning Edition and All Things Considered on Maine Public Radio.
Women candidates are used to having to answer for their gender. Now men running in 2020 are having to answer for theirs too.
As we sort of disrupt the masculine dominance in the presidency, it also means that those who are auditioning to hold the role have to think differently about how they present themselves in terms of gender.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine Foods in the Spotlight. Joining me in the studio, Sam Hayward, award-winning chef and partner with 4th Street Restaurant. Joe Riccio writes about food, drink, and travel. He's the food editor for Decor Maine. And Nancy Harmon Jenkins, journalist, food historian, speaker, and writer. If you would like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now, Sam Sifton, the New York Times food editor and the person who guest edited the Down East Magazine current food issue. Sam, thanks for calling in.
Thanks. Can you believe they allowed me to do that?
Well, I'm wondering about that. You're known for your work with the New York Times, and you seem to be a quintessential New Yorker, but I understand you have deep ties to Maine as well. Tell us about your connection here.
Well, these aren't bona fides. These are just facts. My grandparents lived for many years on Bailey Island until their death. My brother and his wife live in Brunswick, and I try and spend as much time as I can in the state. So that's, I'm not claiming anything. I'm just saying that's why they called me, maybe.
As guest editor of Down East Food Issue, was there some message about Maine food you hoped to get across? Did you learn anything new along the way?
Oh, I learned lots, and there were a couple things that I thought it would be really interesting to bring forward. First and foremost, the kind of rise of women chefs in the state and how important women in the kitchen and in the front of the house are to the health and future of Maine restaurants. I was interested in African food and its arrival in the state, and I was interested as well in all sorts of stuff, goats and periwinkles and all the bounty of Maine.
What does a periwinkle taste like? I've never had one, Sam.
Well, I'm a food critic, and I find it difficult to describe it in a way that will convince you to eat it as well. But when people look at a little baby and they go, "Oh, I could just eat that cheek," it tastes like a baby's cheek.
Well, sold.
So, do you have a favorite Maine food? Anything from that top 35 list? And anything you don't really like, you can tell us.
Well, I will tell you my favorite Maine food, and it's perhaps an odd choice, but I was a huge fan of Crown Pilot crackers, the common cracker.
And yeah. Thank you.
Making sandwiches out of, I love and miss desperately Crown Pilot common crackers.
Okay. What do you not really like?
Well, you know, the fiddlehead is something that is a delicious item. Mm-hmm. I get it. But like ramps before them, they've been so oversold by our friends in the, you know, farm-to-table, foraged food, fancy restaurant crowd that I find that they've become fetishized. And now, as a sort of political act, I find myself in the position of saying, you know what? Overrated.
Wow. Yeah. I'm impressed that you were willing to take that stance. So before we let you go, Sam Sifton, we have to ask you, any inside info to share with our listeners about exciting things coming up in the New York Times food section?
Oh, well, you're very nice to ask about that. Yeah, we've got lots planned as the spring season comes upon us down here in New York and indeed across the land. New recipes at NYTcooking.com every single day of the week now. Production is running on high. We'll even give you some stuff for fiddleheads.
All right. Well, before we let you go, I'm going to ask my guests if they have anything to say to you.
Hey, Sam, it's Nancy.
Hi.
Come back to Maine soon because we really like to have you here.
Well, I will do so. I got a kid to drop off at College of the Atlantic in the fall. So
fantastic.
Stick around.
Stop by Camden on your way.
I sure will.
Thank you. That's Sam Sifton, the food editor and journalist for the New York Times, who guest edited this month's Down East magazine. An email from Emily: Red's hot dogs are always a main classic, not necessarily a dish. I think she probably meant to say red hot dogs, not necessarily a dish. But since moving to Maine, I can't go to a cookout without them. They're not bad, but why do they have to be so brightly colored? Anybody know why they're dark red?
Snappers. I don't know. They stand out. That's you know, you can see them from space. They're.
I went to a public supper a couple of weeks ago with a friend from New York, and she said to the woman across the table, she refused to touch them. And she said to the woman who was sitting across the table from me, "Why are they so red?" And the woman said, "Because that's the way Dean's makes them."
Yes, sir.
Ooh, excellent job, both of you. Janet McKenney wrote, "I was terrified of fiddleheads for years, but tried them last season. I'm a convert and consider them a Maine food and part of Maine culture." So there you go. We're going to go now to, if my little clicker will work, there we go. We have Figgy DiBenedetto on the line. She is the owner of Figgy's, a takeout and catering place in Portland. Thanks for calling in, Figgy.
Hi, nice to be here.
Well, first of all, congratulations. I understand that you won Chopped and that the episode aired just last night on the Food Network. Tell us about your experience.
Oh, man, it was quite a ride. I filmed it over a year ago, so I've been sitting here waiting for it to air so I could tell everybody. But I kept a pretty good secret, and we had a big party last night. And I made actually what my takeout is known for, fried chicken. So I got to make that for the judges and ended up winning.
So did being from Maine come into play at all while you were cooking? Did it help you win?
It absolutely did. So one of the basket items, it was chicken, and I immediately went to baked beans. And I have learned since moving here about 10 years ago how to perfect baked beans. And, you know, it was interesting. You were talking about the red hot dogs. And from what I understand, they were always dyed red because everything else on the bean supper was brown. And so they dyed it red, you know, to kind of keep it of some sort of color on the plate. And I was frying the chickens, and I had the brown beans too, and I thought, oh gosh, I gotta jazz this up somehow. But and then also in the dessert round, we had blueberries and carrots, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's like the two things you can always find at the farmer's market in Maine. So I pulled that one through too. Maine has been, I mean, I moved here for the food, and it has just been such a huge influence on my cooking.
Well, tell us a little bit about your takeout spot, Figgies, and how that fits into the food scene and the food economy here in Maine.
Yeah, so I actually live right next door to my takeout. It's in the West End in Portland, and, you know, like I said, I moved here for the food scene, and it's tough because I, at the time when I started it, I was a single mom, and you know, a lot of restaurants are open late in the evening, and I wanted something that would fit with a schedule so I could be with my son at night. And I'm actually doing cast iron fried chicken, which is what I grew up cooking in Missouri. My parents and grandmother taught me how to do that, and so I, you know, there was not a lot of niches left in Portland, but I think I got that one with the fried chicken. So I was really happy. I was one of the first places to start doing the fried chicken. But Maine has just been so welcoming and wonderful to be in.
Well, it's wonderful to hear. And thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations. Figgy DiBenedetto owns Figgy's Takeout, and she is the newly crowned CHOP champion. And my understanding is this makes 5 CHOPed champions from Maine. So here we go again. let's see. A tweet from Larry. Red hot dogs freak out my wife from away, but I love them. Robert on Facebook says, I've heard coffee brandy and Moxie is called a burnt trailer.
Right.
True or false?
Right. That's true.
I've heard it's called a Rumford, but that's what I thought. But I'm sure there are burnt trailers in Rumford, too.
Okay, we'll go to Eric, who's calling from Raymond. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
How's it going? I was just kind of wondering how everybody feels about Southern cooking has kind of taken off this idea of the classic Americana and how awesome locally sourced it can be. But New England doesn't really have that following yet. There isn't these straight New England staple restaurants that are winning these awards just doing the basis. I was wondering if anybody had any thoughts on how maybe Maine and the rest of New England could kind of get into that.
I would disagree with you a lot about that. I think there's a very, very strong interest in local food here, and it's been growing incrementally over the last 15 or 20 years with, you know, everything from farmers markets to, you know, I think in the last farm census that was taken, Maine has the largest number of young farmers, and it's the only state that had an increase in farmers. And these are all people who are producing food for the most part, not commodities. So we've got a really strong farm movement, and our fishery is still very strong, as the latest reports have indicated. So we've got a lot of local food, and the chefs that I know, the restaurateurs that I know, and that's really from Bar Harbor all down the coast to Portland and south, they're all all passionately interested in what's available locally and putting it on their menu. And they're getting a response from the public for that, too.
Sure. Now, I think, Eric, though, what you mean, though, you're saying that when people think of American food, they think maybe of fried chicken. And you're thinking that maybe they need to think of clam chowder.
Well, no, I think what he's saying is, if I'm not mistaken, you're talking about like Sean Brock, right? And how he does like heirloom beans and rice varieties with like Anson Mills. So he's trying to basically take these forgotten grains that were, you know, staples in that area hundreds of years ago that have essentially been forgotten about and bring those back. And they're not, you know, for instance, like these different kinds of rice, there's different ways to cook them. You know, the beans, they're not just, it's not just one way to do it. But is that what you're kind of referring to, that kind of thing?
That's exactly what I was referring to, yeah. People like that, yep.
Yeah, so I don't know anything about, I mean, as far as Maine, I don't know about any kind of forgotten ingredients.
Well, that's because there's been continuity. I mean, yeah. Even if you look at the great bean variety, I have some pretty funny stories about red beans and rice in Louisiana because the red beans came from Kennebec Bean Company for decades.
Oh, that's great to know.
Which is really interesting that was
the Cajuns and Acadians it's the same tradition, but go on.
And I grew up in a household of Southern cooks. And so I have an affinity with Southern cooking styles. My mother was a great cook. And it is true that Anson Mills has been one of the figurehead organizations that has tried to bring heirloom varieties back into the Southern diet and to highlight them. And we actually buy some at Forestry because they're really good. But we've always had Marifax beans, Jacob's cattle beans. We've always had maple syrup. We've always had yellow eyes. We've always had,
cornmeal.
Yeah. We've always had Kennebec and Katahdin potatoes. We've had island lamb. We've had things that have been going on, and not to mention the fish that are specific to cold water, like the Gulf of Maine, have been there since the founding, since European invasion. So I kind of disagree. I think we have it. It just may not be quite so theatrical.
I think that's the Maine that needs to be talked about more. I think that more people
would be
interested
to
know
that. I think the real problem is that we tend, as Mainers, to be very restrained. We don't push ourselves forward. We let the Southerners do that, and we stand back and wait for people to discover us.
Well, Eric, I really appreciate you opening this part of the conversation. Thanks for calling. We're going to go to Greg, who's calling from Tamworth, New Hampshire. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Jen. I turned trader and moved to New Hampshire, but I grew up in West Falmouth, and my birthday treat every year was to go down to the waterfront and have clam cakes, which were chopped clam patties. Mm-hmm. You get a couple of them in a wax paper bag with tartar sauce, of course. And I loved those. And then I would get a ride on the Nellie G, which was one of the ferries at that time, a really great old boat. But you could also get clam cakes up at Wasson's Grove. If you were headed north on the Gray Road out of town, you'd go to Wasson's Grove. Also, the Smith Farm out there was a great old restaurant. And then farther up the coast, of course, there's Red Zeets by the bridge in Wiscasset, where they have the hot dogs that everybody loves the most. And
the lobster rolls.
Diner. yeah. Moody's Diner for fried clams and homemade pies and all kinds of treats. All the way up to Mount Desert, where you'd get a nice popover at the Jordan Pond House.
They're
not really necessarily Maine foods. They came from England, but they are very special up there and much honored.
Greg, thanks for your call. Michael on Facebook, Fluffernutter. How can your guests not recognize this? I grew up in Van Buren with many family members in New Brunswick. I would walk home a mile away from school just to have a peanut butter and marshmallow sandwich for lunch. But that's kind of the point, is that Fluffernutter isn't just a Maine
thing. I ate Fluffernutters, don't get me wrong, but I just didn't realize that was it was a part of a Maine tradition. I just thought everybody had them.
Okay, here's one for you, Nancy. An email from Anna. Three generations that I know of, probably more, have made corned hake with egg sauce. Sam's nodding too.
Yeah. Corned hake is just salted hake. It's like salt cod. Probably not salted, not dried as long as salt cod is. But it's a way of preserving fish when you can't, you know, you get a big load of fish coming in on the boat and you can't, on the boat, and you can't eat it all at once. So you corn some of it. And the egg sauce is, that's a very old-fashioned Maine sauce. And I hate being so negative about these things, but it's a bechamel with sliced hard-boiled eggs added to it, and it adds a little richness to the austerity of the corned hake. But not a lot of flavor.
But that egg sauce would also be used alongside your 4th of July poached salmon, which is delicious. But it all depends on how you make it and how you season it.
It's like a Maine gravy.
Most of the time, it's not seasoned at all. A few grains of salt and
a pinch of cayenne, and you know.
Well, so how do you make egg sauce?
You make like a bechamel. Right. You mix up flour and butter, and then you add warm milk to it gradually until it becomes the consistency that you want. And then you slice up a bunch of hard-boiled eggs and stir them in, and you pour it over the top of your fish. So you have a very white meal. That's another. Yeah. You'll look at these old-fashioned sort of community cookbooks, and they're full of recipes like that. And you'll have corned hake with egg sauce and boiled potatoes on the side, so you've got nothing but a sea of white in front of you. Nothing to challenge the nose or the taste at all.
It's like Blanquette DeVoe. You know, it's right. Just the same thing.
But you see, in a restaurant kitchen, we'd be snipping some chives over the top of it. We'd make the bechamel with a little wine sauce.
It'd add some reduction red hot dogs.
Sauce, no roux. It would be, you know, you'd apply different techniques and some different ingredients. And at some point, it loses its authenticity. And I guess that's one of my cautions, that something is lost and something's gained.
All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical, and Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Mayor Michael Tubbs of Stockton, California, talks to Dan Pfeiffer about the city's Universal Basic Income pilot program. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. And all this week here on Maine Public Radio, on both Morning Edition and All Things Considered, how the proposed Central Maine Power Transmission Line will impact Western Maine, the state, the economy, and the environment. This evening on All Things Considered, the environmental consequences of the project and how some are looking to strike a balance between a potential climate change benefit and possible threats to the ecosystems of Western Maine. And tomorrow on Morning Edition, we'll hear from some of the Mainers whose lives would be directly affected by the CMP project. Power Struggle in the Maine Woods on Maine Public Radio on both Morning Edition and All Things Considered, with more on the web at mainepublic.org/power.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Iconic Maine Foods and the Food Scene in Maine. Here with me, Joe Riccio, food editor for Decor Maine, Nancy Harmon Jenkins, food historian, journalist, and cookbook author, and Sam Hayward, chef and partner at 4th Street Restaurant. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. An email from Allison: I hope someone will mention that Maine is among our nation's leaders in the number of farms, including those operated by young farmers, that provide organic or low-input produce and meats. The fresh food that we can buy locally at farmers markets and even in the big grocery stores is a hallmark of Maine cooking and much more healthy than some other so-called iconic Maine foods.
Absolutely. I think you're so right, Allison. And I think, you know, I don't think we understand how lucky we are in this country. I belong to several Facebook pages of people who are interested in food from all over the world and who talk about it a lot. And I'm stunned at what is not available in other parts of our country that we just take for granted here. And it's the farms, it's the fishermen, and it's the food producers. It's all those people who are making great breads, all the wonderful cheeses that are being made, all the great beers that are being made in Maine. And all of this is widely available. It's not restricted to an elite at all. And the farmers markets, for the most part, in my experience, all take SNAP cards or WIC stamps or something to help people out who can't afford to spend a lot of money on food. So that's another very positive thing that happens in this state. I think there are three, at least in my experience, there are three organizations that really have been behind that. And forefront, of course, is MOFCA, Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, which has really pushed farming. And then Maine Farmland Trust, which has made it possible for young farmers to enter into farming without spending an awful lot of money on land. And finally, Slow Money Maine, which works to engage people who've got money that they want to invest in something to do good, and the people who need it, who are involved in the food world. So those three pieces of the puzzle, I think, have worked together to create this wonderful bounty that then our chefs and our cooks take and turn into all these wonderful foods, not including Indian pudding.
Barbara on Facebook says, is there anyone on your panel who can speak about indigenous people from this area and what their iconic food is? Wabanaki.
Yeah. Lots and lots of the food that we treasure today. And I think corn might be the number one. That and obviously the fishing resource, all of the clams and mussels and, you know, the swordfish fishing out on the islands. There's evidence of that going way, way back in the history of the Wabanaki. So these were people who were very resourceful about things like wild foods, but they also were gardeners. They also raised beans and corn and vegetables in order to make a full plate for everybody all year round.
We'll go to Richard, who's calling from Norway. And this is Norway, Maine, right, Richard?
It is, yes.
Go ahead.
An aside, egg sauce is also great on Finn and Hattie.
Oh, yes. Yum.
But iconic food for me is slack salted dried fish.
Right.
My family is from way down east. You simply put your hook in the water, not even baited, and you'd bring up harbor pollock. And those would be salted, sprinkled with pepper to keep the flies off, then hung on the clothesline to dry.
Wow.
And it was so odoriferous, though delicious, so odoriferous that when I didn't like kids in school, I would take some dried fish and put it in their pockets.
That's good. That is, I will keep that in mind.
Yes.
All the kids I don't like at school.
Richard, thanks so much for calling and sharing. We're going to go to Ernie from Shabig Island. Hi, Ernie. Go ahead. Hello, Ernie. Are you there?
I've got probably tons of hake. And I've probably eaten almost as much of it. And I wanted to tell you about corned hake. Corned hake isn't any good unless you have pork scraps with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Some pork scraps. And it's good with egg sauce, but it's better with pork scraps. And also I heard you talking about harbor pollock. And that was one of old people's delicacies, which slack salted pollock. And corned hake, the way you make it is, you take a hake fillet and you put it in a glass dish. Don't really cover it with salt, but give it a good generous sprinkle and corn it overnight. And then rinse it off and then boil it out, boil the fish out until it's done. And then put it on your plate with some boiled potatoes and some pork scraps, and you've got a Maine delicacy.
Okay, Ernie, you've
Absolutely.
Got to tell us, too, when you say pork scraps, what have you done with your pork? What kind of pork scraps? Describe those.
Salt pork.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's basically almost like a chowder. Pork. I mean, all these chowder elements.
Yeah, but it's a deconstructed chowder.
Right, exactly.
Right.
That's what they call it back then, deconstructed chowder.
Boy, Ernie, thanks so much for calling in. I love this conversation about corned hake. Here we go.
It's come up a lot.
Hi, Esther from West Poland. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thank you. I had a number of things, but I'll just mention them, and then I can. One of them is shell beans that hasn't been mentioned. And then the homemade baked kidney beans with salt pork and homemade brown bread. My mother did that every Saturday night. And the family, when they come to Maine, that's what they want. And then the Indian pudding was mentioned, and grape nut ice cream. And then there's also Italian sandwiches that they can't seem to find anywhere except in Maine. They're subs or something, but they just aren't the same.
Tell them to stop asking for Italian sandwiches when they're outside Maine, and they might be able to get them.
Well, and Esther, thank you for calling. And also, Italians are in the list in Down East Magazine, so I appreciate it. You know what we haven't talked about is beanhole beans. Are any of you aficionados of beanhole beans?
I mean, it's just baked beans.
Well,
Nancy's trying hard not to be negative, I think.
No, it's okay.
She's smiling.
There's a famous Bean Hall Bean Festival that the Camden Historical Society puts on at the Conway House every year. And the first year that they did it, they pulled the bean pots up out of the bean hole, and the beans had burned right down to the bottom. So they're being a little bit more. It's kind of tricky. You really have to know what you're doing. There's one man in Knox County. I'm trying to think of his name, and it will come to me. My sister, if she's listening, will know who I'm talking about. And he is the bean hole bean expert. You really have to know what you're doing. You can't just dig a hole in the ground, light a fire in it, and set a pot of beans in and expect to get anything out of it.
Same thing with the lobster. Right, on the beach. Exactly. You can't just dig a hole and toss and torture a bunch of lobsters and call it a day.
An email from Lynn. I grew up spending summers on Sennebec Pond in Appleton, and the best breakfast in the world is fresh-caught white perch dredged in salt, pepper, and flour and fried up with some fresh eggs from the farm next door.
Mm. Sure. Mm. Why not? Why wouldn't we?
Can you describe, this is from Joel, can you describe and remember snow pudding? Nana would make it every Thanksgiving only, egg whites with lemon egg sauce. Sam, you're nodding. You've had
That's a 19th century thing, and it actually shows up in Maria Parloa's great Appledore cookbook from 1873. And I've actually never made it, but every year we do a little retreat out on Appledore Island and dredge up some recipes from her book, and that's one that Evan Mallett and I have considered putting on for dessert. So maybe that, this year we'll do it.
Is that the same thing as œuf à la neige? Do you think?
It's a little, I think it's a little different, but it's similar idea. Œuf à la neige, again, means snow eggs, and those were little dumplings of meringue that were poached often with a crème anglaise, as a kind of a custard cream.
They both sound
France.
Very fancy.
They're really, well, you know, they're not that difficult to make.
Well, Nana only made it for Thanksgiving, he said.
So yep.
That's interesting.
We've got Steve in Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, sardines, the yard is silent, Eastport. Lubeck and Prospect, I don't even know if they're still canning them, but we used to eat them like potato chips, you know. They my father got them by the case with oil or mustard. That was the two. And actually in Eastport, I think they drop a sardine off the building New Year's Eve in downtown Eastport. So I haven't heard talk about sardines. And then you talk about Indian pudding in Eastport, too, that's called the Waco or Waco Diner, has the best Indian pudding around. And then, of course, WA Beans has been making, they call it the Maine Red Snapper. They distinguish because no one has been making red snappers for 100 years, and they still do in Bangor, Maine. So they still produce them. So.
Well, good information, Steve. Thanks. And sardines are in the Down East Magazine list. What they write is more than 50 sardine canneries once dotted the Maine coast. Was the state's biggest industry in the mid-20th century. Today, every last one is gone.
However, I do want to put in a bid that reminds me for smoked herring. I got some smoked herring about a month ago from a guy down in South Bristol who smokes it himself. And boy, they are a treat that should be better known, should be on that Down East list. But
we'll go. Sandy Oliver posted on Facebook, the goal of harvesting maple sap to boil down was in the past mostly to get sugar, not syrup, to get sugar. Not syrup. And generally, it was just substituted for the cane sugar products without comment. Maple syrup, when cooked till very thick, was sometimes called maple molasses. Sometimes folks in the past boiled cider down to make a dark syrup and called it cider molasses. Ooh, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. We'll go to Lisa calling from Camden. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. Iconic Maine food for my family is American chop suey in an ice shack.
Oh, yeah. I love American chop suey. It's all about the green bell pepper, you know. I like it actually like with a little touch of cinnamon in it, like the Greek diner kind of style. I don't know. I'm into it. I love American chop suey more than
But
normal.
How did it get that name?
Oh, I have no idea.
My mother used to make it. And I had to go live in Italy before I realized that it's actually an Italian dish. But Greek diner, that's a good I think it's something that's not well known about Maine is a lot of what we think of as Italian food, including pizza, was actually brought here by Greeks.
Yeah, like all the House of Pizzas, those are all generally Greek.
Lisa, thanks for your call. An email from Judy. Red flannel hash made from the leftovers of a New England boiled dinner. Mm-hmm. Okay. Peter in Bristol, go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Yeah, my name's Peter. You can still get corned hake on Thursday nights at Reunion Station, which is on Route 1. I don't know if it's in Damariscotta or Nobleboro, but if you're going north on Route 1, it's on your left, and you'll see it from the highway.
Good information.
Excellent.
And then I wanted to bring up something that is a bit from the past at this point, cheeks and tongues.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's
cheeks
the best part.
And tongues are cut from the head of traditionally from codfish. And the cheek is a muscle like on the face. We sort of cut it with a circular motion. And then the tongues are sort of a gelatinous, I assume it's a muscle also, under jaw of a codfish, but probably any fish. So those were back when there were big codfish around, we used to cut them out pretty regularly.
Well, it's funny, kind of like fiddleheads, those have now gone from scraps to, you know, what you find in high-end restaurants now.
Is that right?
Oh, they're delicious. Yeah.
I had them by the pound. When I was in Newfoundland a couple of years ago, every restaurant that we went to had cod tongues and cheeks. And they're delicious. They really are. And that gelatinous, it's underneath the lower jaw, what they call the tongue, but it isn't really a tongue. It has a gelatinous texture that sounds kind of yucky, but it really is wonderful.
So at many of the fish markets, the restaurants will source them before the rest of us can get them?
Exactly. Yeah. But somebody has to cut them out, and it really is kind of a hassle to take them out. But they're delicious, and I have to say they make fantastic chowder ingredients. And cod cheeks are amazing fried, just lightly breaded. And deep fried. They're amazing.
Yeah, Rob Evans, back when he owned Hugo's, used to do a cod cheek chowder. That was phenomenal.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Peter. We've had so much fun. So many people trying to call in, and we're out of time, but it's always so fun to talk about iconic Maine foods, especially at lunchtime and especially with these fantastic guests. Thanks to all three of you, Nancy Harmon Jenkins, food historian, journalist, speaker, and writer, Sam Hayward, award-winning chef and partner at 4th Street Restaurant, and Joe Riccio, food and travel writer and food editor for Decor Maine. I'm having a hard time talking today. Today's show is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics that reflect the unique character of Maine. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can hear us again tonight at 8. Our website is mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.